A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napzok.
And this is the Clone Wars Report. This has become now almost my favorite part of doing the podcast is hearing what sort of a breaking news sound that you will make every week.
I'm running out of options. We're going to have to reuse some.
Well, I like this one. Really had some tension to it. I was like, is this going to be any sort of music or is he just going to make spaceship noises?
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's a spaceship breaking news report.
Breaking spaceship news. I would be happy for that if a spaceship just zoomed by in real life and floated around outside my apartment and had a little ticker going. That would be great. Anyway, we're going to get into this episode of Clone Wars Dangerous Debt. This is the 7th episode of Season 7. Dangerous Debt. We've been talking a lot about the titles. Does that grab you as a specific kind of song from a specific band? What's Dangerous Debt sound like to you?
It sounds like a 1986 album by like Duran Duran or something, you know. You got some dangerous debt to pay. We're on a sailboat. A lot of big poofy haired women around them. I that's what it is. Though the last few titles have been great. This one was good. I enjoyed it. But the last few titles have been big wins for Clone Wars.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is nice and straightforward. There's something about Dangerous Debt to me that made me think of like a board game from the 80s that maybe some sort of plastic rhino would be involved in for some reason. I don't know why, but that's
catch the rhino before he asks for money.
Dangerous Debt, or maybe it's an actual plastic loan shark. There we go. Pitching the board games. So what is your what's your overall reaction to this episode as we're getting towards the end of this four-part arc?
I think, though it does lack the resolution of this arc, because that's still coming, I think this should stand the test of time as one of the better Clone Wars episodes, I think. And I'm talking about all seven seasons. It had everything that we love about Clone Wars, some depth, some new context on old moments, and in a way that they almost have really... never done to this level. Some action. It just looks sharp. And then adding to the intrigue or lore, bringing characters in we have known before with a cliffhanger. I mean, it had everything that we need, I think, other than a lightsaber.
Yeah. A lot more action. Tons of blasters blasting, unlike the limited amount of blasting we've had in previous episodes of this Ahsoka arc. No lightsaber, but I feel like the threat of a lightsaber, the desire for one, was very present. There was like a lightsaber haunting in this episode to me, because there was so much about who are the Jedi and who should the Jedi be and what's the impact on the galaxy and on Ahsoka. So a lot of Jedi presence that I really liked. I was really happy. I don't mind Clone Wars episodes that are not, you know, wall-to-wall action. Mm-hmm. But I was really happy to see some of that more explosion of action to get that feeling and sense of adventure serial back. So I was really excited for that, and that it was a different kind of action, which mm-hmm. we'll talk about, in that it was seeing, you know, Trace and Rafa, just some kind of people with blasters blasting away, and then Ahsoka kicking ass, but discreet ass kicking was
yeah
was fun and new. And then, as you said, the different, lots of different kinds of canon connections made it really interesting and feel like a part of the much larger tapestry of the Clone Wars story. I'm going to wait for any final real strong opinion until that fourth episode of the arc. But my only even slight criticism is I'm still not entirely sure about the kind of the pacing of events and whether it is feeling a little stretched. But even in terms of just when the events fall over four episodes, you know, there's a part of me that goes, could this have been three episodes? We'll see what the fourth episode delivers. But honestly, I feel like that is kind of, even if I had that criticism, it would be a mild one, because that's part of the tradition of Clone Wars, because all of these episodes, all these arcs are both telling a story with some depth and some character, but then they kind of have always stopped whenever they want for whatever is fun to the creators. If there's a big action scene, or if they just want to spend times with some droids doing some pratfalls, they will stop and do that. So a proud tradition of Clone Wars, I think.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say a tradition of being a Star Wars fan is to have some small criticisms that... No, I agree with you on some of the things that we might be discussing later. I think there were some weird beats I felt, but I think in terms of, you know, again, where it falls on the final place of the arc is key, and I think that's a great point.
Cool. Very excited for that fourth episode, but for now, let's dig into this one. We always talk about the themes first, so the thing that jumped out the most to me as a big Star Wars theme, going back to Lucas teaching his Padawan Dave Filoni, and Filoni now being the master of these episodes of Clone Wars, the theme that jumped out to me is the power of choice and generally taking responsibility for mistakes or beliefs you might have had in the past. Did that pop out to you? Does that make sense to you, or did you feel something different?
No, it definitely is right where I'm at, and some of it this might be one of the first things in Star Wars recently that kind of upset me on a level where I had to kind of work through my own kind of emotions on things, which is good. I want Star Wars to hold up a mirror to me sometimes. And so, yeah.
You know, go ahead.
But a lot of the deeper questions that are not easily answered about power of choice, and especially when it comes to Rafa and Trace and their life and some of the lessons that they have learned, but also some of the things that brought them down this path, I would not blame them for. You know what I mean? Like it should be a complicated answer to some of these Star Wars questions, and I think I got that in this episode.
Cool. So were you specifically affected by this idea that Trace and Rafa are kind of going back and forth? We learn a lot about it, but they're kind of going back and forth about whether or not leading this specific kind of life of crime, what they're doing now, dubious work, working with criminals, that they kind of didn't have a choice. Is that the specific one that's really hooking you?
It's hooking me in a good way. Like I that raises the questions, like what they can choose. I think there's some hard choices to make and there's some brave choices to make in those situations. But also I think there is a survival factor to what they have to do, including some of even their skills that they have come out of their survival. So that actually was, I thought, really good to me. It was some of their backstory that challenged me in a good way.
Cool. Excellent. So breaking down some of these big moments of choice and talking through them, I feel like the tone is set right away at the beginning when we see them in their very beautifully designed cell. Trace, Rafa, and Ahsoka are kind of disagreeing about who is responsible for this. And I really like it because this arc has had this sort of a little bit of fun with a sibling bickering and how much is Ahsoka the outsider versus how much is she becoming the third sister of the Martezes. So it's got this just kind of fun of like, well, we wouldn't be here if you didn't screw up. And Ahsoka kind of coming in with her moral high ground of, well, you know, I would never do any of this. It's fun, but it also totally sets the tone of we are beginning the episode with none of them fully wanting to take responsibility for their part in getting them in this cell.
Fully agreed. I love the play and I love how where Rafa and Ahsoka still all through the episode, there's several times where Rafa's kind of giving up Ahsoka. Just hilarious in a dark way. Just like, yeah, take her.
Yeah, that, and that really, really dicey. We'll come back for you.
Yeah.
Nope. We won't. Yeah, there's so much about the Martez's experience that keeps having these great Han Solo echoes, you know, and it that moment reminded me of like Han doesn't ever believe people are going to come back for him, you know, and here's a Martez who's kind of in the general cut of Han Solo demonstrating, yeah, I have no intention of coming back for Ahsoka. Very funny. I think there's the part that you're talking about, and I think the big thing that is added to this episode then is the reveal of Trace and Rafa's past. The previous episode, there had been that sort of dramatic part where Trace says, well, our parents, you know, ellipsis, you know, dramatic pause, split. And then we learn, no, they were killed in a Jedi incident. And this really does get to lots of setting up elements of the idea of choice and taking responsibility, because we start to hear about, well, this Jedi made this choice to protect this crowded landing platform and instead threw a ship into a wall that killed the Martez's parents. So you've got that choice. And then we've got the added idea that the Jedi kind of, and we'll talk more about this, but the Jedi sort of left the Martez's to their own devices. And then that caused the Martez's to make the choice to just survive however they needed to and move away from the teachings of their parents into a sort of gritty, this is just the way it is. So I thought there were so many different ideas that you could, you know, run down of what does choice mean based on that, you know, horrific Jedi parent death backstory. Yeah. Out of all of that, what was resonating with you?
I'll say this clear as my topic sentence here. I loved everything about this, including the tough stuff for me to hear personally. I was upset with Luminari unduly, upset with her reaction. I thought Ahsoka handled all you can say is that I'm sorry at that point and then deal with some of the stuff later on. I would also ask Rafa what would you have done in the same situation? And it ain't so easy. So it's layered for me. It really was. And then I love this. I love when we look at something we've just held on high in terms of a general Star Wars action trope, Jedi fighting for justice. Well, now we have some reality to it. And that, I'm telling you, Justin, that's one of my favorite. I just loved it, including the fact that some of it made me grumpy. Does that make sense? You know, like, because it's so real, complicated, and yeah, I am not, because we always go on this, the Jedi, there's some problems, but hey, justice for the Jedi, and this is a big, this is one of the added into that pot of,
yeah.
I don't think they had another choice in that situation, but the choice to what you do after is where they failed, if that makes sense, from my point of view. So I was really intrigued by all of it, and how Ahsoka has to face it, and isn't technically even a Jedi.
Not right now. Yeah.
Or
is she? Or, I mean, she's not technically, right? I mean, you know, if Jedi had, you know, badges, she's throwing hers down on the desk, you know.
Take it. But, yeah.
I want to dig into a little bit of the Jedi choices separately, because they're so juicy. But I think one of the things that I really liked in all of this is how incredibly emotional Ahsoka was when she said, "I'm sorry." And we know Ahsoka is a, you know, empathetic person. And we know that she, you know, really likes Trace and is grateful for Trace's kindness when Ahsoka was down. But you have that added emotion that, you know, the Martez sisters don't know, but we, the audience, know that Ahsoka sounds like she is personally apologizing, even though she didn't do this. And the thing that my mind immediately went to is Ahsoka racing through every choice she ever made on a battlefield and thinking of, did I do that to some other kids that I've never met?
Right. No, I think you're right. I think in that moment, I think they play it very well. And again, we talk often about how just in season 7 here, they're blessed with, you know, some better technology to make facial expressions. I mean, it's so interesting to watch this season. It just jumps off the screen for me better. So I think you're right. I think there's a lot of that in that moment.
Yeah.
Rolodex of incidents.
Yeah. And the Rolodex of incident. So how much is Ahsoka taking personal responsibility versus is she being too hard on herself? And is she saying, hey, just because I was a member of the Jedi Order, I am responsible for every mistake any Jedi has ever made? There's also, to me, this weight of almost wanting to reach the screen and go, Ahsoka, it's okay. It's not, you know, it's not your personal responsibility. It's great that you question your actions. It's great that you question your former allegiance with the Jedi, but is this entirely, you know, is she putting too much blame on herself?
Right, but it makes me really love the character even more that she'd be willing to take on any part of that guilt. You know, speaks highly to her.
Yeah, of her. Yeah, and it's well set up that she's right on the cusp of saying, like, yeah, I do have high morality. Yeah, I do sound like a Jedi because I am. And it seems like she is swinging sort of back on that pendulum swing and then gets so hard knocked back the other way. It makes it extra emotional and powerful to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I just love the Ahsoka character so much. It continues to reward us all.
Yeah. Yeah. So going along in these sort of big moments of choice that jumped out to me, along with the sort of power of choice, there's also the taking responsibility that you have made choices and they have had ramifications like Ahsoka is working through. I really love that this episode had Rafa kind of dancing closer to taking responsibility for her choice to get involved with this job. And she's got the line that's almost played kind of for laughs. It's played for the funny that, well, you know, when I took this job, I didn't realize that it would involve so much torture and execution. Strange but great comedy line. But then at the end, right at the end, she truly does feel apologetic and is taking responsibility. Did that land for you? Were you happy that Rafa took responsibility?
I'm trying to think of happy but not happy like, haha, you learned your lesson, Rafa. Just like the continuing development of her as a character or her as a person, if she's real, which sometimes we watch these movies and shows and we're convinced they're all real. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's again, there's no easy answer from any of the big questions in this episode. I love that her parents, specifically her mother, was, you know, had a certain point of view that maybe they needed to get back to, but I don't fault her for anything they've done decision-wise, Trace and Rafa. I really don't. And sometimes you get exposed to the bigger picture and you don't have to be defined by your beliefs and choices. Those can always evolve and hopefully grow, you know? So that's happy's the way to say it, I guess.
Yeah, it's a weird phrase.
I know what you mean. I'm just like, yeah. What am I really feeling about it? I'm not just like, hey, criminal learned your lesson. I'm like, oh, good. You're growing.
Right. I think there's that. I think that if Rafa refused to take any responsibility, it would be a demonstration of a character who was incapable of growth, and in the real world, and in my opinion of Star Wars morality, that's never good, right? When the character can't question and take responsibility for maybe a dubious choice they might have made. So mm-hmm. I think that's where the word happy is coming from me, to see that this is a character that's going to be capable of growth and possibly change.
I just think I have a guilty conscience of taking joy in other people's suffering. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, one has to wrestle with that. Is somebody who keeps saying one of their favorite parts of Rogue One is when Darth Vader mercilessly, you know, murders totally just people trying to do a good thing. Yeah, I got to wrestle with that for myself. I don't want to put words in your mouth, so I'm trying to frame this because I'm really interested in how you're responding to Rafa.
Yeah,
are you? I know that you have a law and order background. You've worked as security, and I know family members have been police officers. But I also always get the sense of you that you are a person who will do what needs to be done. Is there a part of you that's sort of empathizing with, hey, if you were in a position like Rafa, you would do whatever, you, Ken Namsok, would do whatever it takes to make sure your people are okay?
Yeah. I mean, I'll just talk specifically. I was involved in an incident with a multi-person gang fight that we were involved in, and in the process of rushing to the scene, one of my employees knocked out a 12-year-old kid that was in the way.
Now,
this is not death. Parents weren't dead. I get it, but like, and I've had other incidents like that. I have other things like that. Family members, friends, gone through something like that. So, given again, I'd have to do the same thing. Given the choice again, I'd have to, would we not want to hit a knock over a kid and who fell to the floor like a boxer had punched him in the face? Yeah, no, I don't want that. No one wanted that. It felt terrible. That's going to happen. Might happen. Potentially could happen. How you respond and how you choose to respond after it is why I said I was upset with the Illuminati moment. I thought that was a great moment for Rafa to put that, because it wasn't right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think so. That's where the layers of choices come in. And I would say, I'm being honest. I watched this episode and it was one of the first times ever I was like, oh, come on. And I wanted to grab Rafa and be like, what would you do in that situation? If you had force powers and you were, where would you throw it? You know, and that's not fair, man. I'm being honest with how I was working through this episode the first time I watched it.
Yeah.
But that's why it goes into different kind of things. I was harder on my employees during the situations than the public. Like, we must always be better and seek solutions and seek help and all this kind of, even on the lower levels of, hey, I can't find the gap, you know, like, so it challenged me in different ways, and there's no simple answer to it. And that's what it inspired in me, which is great, which is why I keep going, this is great. Star Wars isn't just pew, 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 you know? And yeah. I love the reflection back on a moment that we didn't, you know, we all watched, right? Wasn't it the movie? Was it the movie? I'm trying to remember where it was. Or was it?
No, we didn't actually see this. This would have happened at the end of the episode Hostage Crisis, where Cad Bane actually does break her out.
Right. Thank you. So, but to have, again, to have now not just context of learning new canon clues, but learning, you know, the hows and the, you know, the whats and the whys of all this moment, really interesting to me. And so the second time I watched it, I was able to not remove myself from the situation emotionally, but just like, this is a great story. It's well, it's a circle of storytelling, all angles, all things. And I love what you're saying about the choices, how you respond to big moments. Continue. You continue to have choices, I believe, though some of the choices might be slim or you may not have as many as other people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I, that's what I was gravitating to. And
excellent. Excellent.
And, hey, having to make sure you're pulling towards the light and not going down the dark side for me.
Yeah. Speaking of the dark side, there's a really interesting exchange to me between, Rafa and Ahsoka about Trace. Rafa and Ahsoka throughout the episode kind of have a little banter of trying to, you know, kid each other and have a little bit more maybe respect for one another. And Rafa at one point, Ahsoka maybe says to Rafa, like, hey, you clearly have skills. Maybe you are cut out for this. But maybe Trace isn't. And Rafa says, well, it, basically, it's Trace's choice if she wants to follow me. And Ahsoka counters that, well, no, Trace is not going to say no to her sibling, which gets into these really interesting ideas of choice. And of course, it feels like Ahsoka absolutely working through, did I make my own choices or was I just following Anakin because I would say yes to anything because I love my older brother Jedi Master?
I love that you brought that up, man. I love that you brought that up. This is what happens when you take a moment to really watch these shows and the storytellers are doing their job, because absolutely that's what I'm taking from it, right? Because there's, on the surface level, there's some stuff with Trace. Yeah, Trace does have a choice. She doesn't know she has a choice, maybe. Maybe that's, and that's a simplified way to look at it. She doesn't know she has a choice. She might learn that. I think Ahsoka learned that at one point, right? Like, pretty big. I have a choice to do this. But I love what you just said. I love what you said, because we keep talking about this mentions of Skywalker Academy and my brother, and we all get our heartstrings pulled. But also, what's the other side of that is now she is maybe looking back at it. Was I going down the right path? And who knows? She's not aware of it yet. Maybe she'll, maybe, you know, oh gosh, does this lead to the dark side? Could this lead to the dark side? Those are big questions for this wonderful character, and questions about Anakin and Darth Vader.
Yeah. And also just like her trying to let Rafa see, you don't know, as a older sibling, as a sort of a mentor, you don't recognize the sway you hold over your sister. And because I've been in your sister's place, I really recognize that. So I'm going to try to hold up the mirror to you. And I'm so curious to see if they're going to follow through on that with Rafa realizing that, you know, she has more influence on Trace than she is allowing herself to admit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's important. I think, yeah. What if Anakin had learned, you know, what if you'd been told, hey, you know, you got some stuff going on. Make sure you don't pass that stuff on to your, you know, your sister by choice here.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, yeah, interesting to see, you know, what elements of Ahsoka wrestling with the Jedi are the Jedi in general or Anakin specifically.
Yeah. Ooh, column A, column B situation there. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about, we've already you've already touched on a little bit, but the sort of other big Lucas Star Wars question is, how should the Jedi act? And this is a thing that I've been on a lot about when we talk about justice for the Jedi and just saying, well, yep, they screwed up in the prequels. They were bad. Like, yep, they made mistakes. They absolutely made mistakes. But appreciating the finer points of all of the Star Wars storytelling, that this is what the Jedi constantly wrestle with, is in their ideal world, everything would be fine and they could just meditate. But they want to, you know, they want to defend. But as soon as you act, anytime you take an act, especially if you have great power like the Jedi, you risk those actions causing accidentally even more pain. And this is such a great way to wrestle with it, where we can watch this episode and hear that story and absolutely empathize with the Martez sisters of, yeah, that's awful what the Jedi did. But then you go and ask yourself, well, hey, a dangerous gangster is escaping. after another gangster held a bunch of senators hostage. The Jedi's are the guardians of peace and justice. What, are they just going to sit on their thumbs?
Yeah.
And yeah. And you're really falling on the empathizing with the Jedi perspective from your own experience that,
yeah,
hey, sometimes if you've been given the responsibility to act, you have to act.
Yeah. And then it's 360 degree approach to the situation that I think is needed. This ties to Cassian Andor being raised by separatists and being wary, rightfully so, of the Jedi, based somewhat on maybe on propaganda or point of view, but also real experience with, I'm sure, what his family went through. So I love that it questions that. I think there's a choice that Luminara had that she didn't make, you know?
Yeah. So you've talked about that a couple times of hey, in dangerous moments, sometimes maybe people are going to get hurt. But your critique is what Luminara does afterwards. Let's talk about that a little bit. So that seems to be the real sticking point, is that Luminara goes to the Martez sisters and doesn't really offer them any practical help, but tells them that they will be okay because the Force will be with them. And that's the part that really bothered you, right?
It's part of what bothers me. Yeah, yeah. And in the end, what bothers me. So this is what I do personally. Personally, I might strike out, get angry at something or someone or a situation, right? I strike out, da 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 da. And then I slowly start to calm down and realize my mistake in the situation, or what I've done before that led to this, or what I should do after, and in these types of situations, this is what I talk about, this kind of 360 degree looking at all of the situation. I would stand by the Jedi's decision, but to her to come by and just be like, say your prayers and walk off, you're not completing your journey. You're not completing your mission. You're not completing in your duty in its complete entirety there. You know, you're not done. You're not done. And she failed. And that is, to me, a little bit of a reflection on some of the stuff George was saying and what we feel about Ahsoka. We really feel Ahsoka is Jedi-ing right. And is reflective of the core of the Jedi, and that the order had lost its way. I'm not putting a lot of blame on Luminara. Like, you know, this, she's the, you know, number one example of the Jedi cracking during the prequel eras. But I don't think even then, faced with these two now refugees of this situation, I don't think Ahsoka would have made that same decision. You know what I mean? She has the true core of the Jedi. I don't think the Jedi in the High Republic era would do this. We'll find that out. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's where I was really interested. That's that big question of what was the Order doing? Maybe it was just an individual. Maybe Luminara made this decision and no one else in the Order knew. We don't know. It's an interesting iceberg, tip of the iceberg storytelling here. But that's where my mind went with this.
Yeah, my mind went to, is it a thing that we hear a lot about in this era of Jedi? Is it like red tape, where Luminara would normally want to take some kind of responsibility for them, but that involves like, well, no, there's that's a whole court procedure. That's a whole, you know, we go through the government for that. So the Jedi can't get involved with that. That's red tape.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that my mind went to is that, you know, there's this whole great perhaps meta critique. You know, you've got Lucas is the master passing things on to Dave Filoni, and Dave Filoni is the master now, and we're going full circle. And is there a little bit of Filoni critiquing Star Wars of the past? Because this is a thing that fans have talked about and fans have joked about, where you will see Jedi go, oh, we've got a problem. Well, let's meditate on it. Or don't worry, the Force will tell us what to do. And sometimes you do want to yell at the screen like, no, practical answer. Give them a practical solution. And there's a part of me that wonders, is this, you know, a point where Luminara means well.
Mm-hmm.
She means to apologize and means to say, you know, this horrible thing has befallen you, but now you have your choice of how you will make your way in the galaxy, and I have faith in you. Good luck. Or is this, hey, that's nice that you believe in the Force Luminara, but you have a responsibility to practically do something.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't have the answer to exactly what that is, but I to your point of Filoni, some kind of meta look back, I think in a way, whether intentional or not, it works that way. It really does kind of make me think about it in a wonderful way. I love this kind of storytelling in our modern era of Star Wars. So yeah, I want to go. Yeah. And I think Dave would agree the Jedi are right, you know, or good. You know what I mean? Like he would want justice for the Jedi too, but they have to get there. They have to earn that. And maybe that's part of what he's trying to put out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's pretty okay critiquing the Jedi, what with working in the Clone Wars era and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You mentioned this, and is another thing that really jumped out to me in this episode's wrestling with who are the Jedi and what should they be. This through line that Ahsoka seemed to be wanting to react in the opposite from the Luminara tale, where there's that through line where Ahsoka asks Trace why Trace helped Ahsoka in the first place. And she said, well, that's because that's how my mom raised me. And then we felt we didn't have a choice. We couldn't operate like that after my parents died. But then Ahsoka later reflects that back to her, that same Martinez mom philosophy of, well, this is what I do, because Rafa asks Ahsoka why she's helping. And Ahsoka says, well, this is just what I do. I help people when I see them in trouble. And is that what you were talking about when you say we are seeing Ahsoka Jedi-ing right?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe, whether, again, some of it, she just might not know that she's doing it perfectly. I mean, there's no perfect way. She's going to make mistakes. I get that. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just her nature. It's truly her nature. And the fact that it was their mother's nature. And I understand where they're going. Look, we have to huddle up. We can't help. We got to worry about us using yours right now. I like that, but I think for just, it is truly Ahsoka's nature, which makes her even beyond a Jedi. She doesn't need the badge of the lightsaber. That's who she is. I like that.
Yeah. And there's a real push-pull again between, I think, the way that some fans imagined the Jedi from the original trilogy versus how the story has been crafted in all of Star Wars later storytelling. And there's a real interesting thing to me about, should the Jedi be sort of macro or micro focused, because my take on the Jedi in the prequel era is, like with slavery, we're like, well, we don't think that's right, but we are worried about what's going to happen if we go to a large scale war with a bunch of criminals, a bunch of different, you know, planets and organizations to deal with that problem on a macro level. And here's Ahsoka almost saying, like, I kind of think Jedi should just wander around in any individuals or any individual situation they see, they should help. Like, it feels like Ahsoka is almost making the argument of, like, Qui-Gon, I know you can't take down all slavery on Tatooine, but you should have just rescued Shmi because she was right there in front of you. And she was a person who needed help in front of you right now.
Yeah, that's a big question. And it's a big question. And maybe as we start to learn more about what came before, maybe that's where they were. Again, going to this idea of them being generals in a war, right? I mean, it seemed cool. That seemed really cool in 2002. I didn't question it at all. I mean, because we were raised with General Kenobi, you know, years ago, you served my father in Clone Wars. I didn't think about it. And I love that I do. So yeah. Maybe Ahsoka's right.
Yeah. And I like that you get to see General Kenobi, you know, care about the big picture, but also care about the little people when he can. And it's just such an interesting debate to me. And I hope we get to see more of it. But moving along, the moral of this episode was, who you were does not have to define who you are. It is a pretty familiar Star Wars idea, but how did it grab you? What did it make you think of?
This is a definitely, because on the surface, that's real simple. We also just dealt with that in Rise of Skywalker, right? So there's a lot of connections there. But especially when you rewatch the episode and take notes, I don't suggest anyone needs to take notes to rewatch the shows. But when you do, this really works on several different layers in different areas, you know, because it's truly not just what, but what you were, but who, and that can go on. You know, I'm a smuggler. I was a smuggler. Now I'm a rebel. Now, you know, I was a spice runner. Now I'm a resistance leader. It's more than job titles, but it really, this episode, it's constant beliefs and tactics. And then also, I think what people think of you doesn't mean you have to stay in that box and have to live in that box. And nothing can define you. And don't let things, don't even let you define yourself in terms of how you act going forward, you know? And again, going to the change and growth.
Yeah. Yeah. That idea that you can reinvent yourself, like, yeah, from just a real world place of, you know, hey, I've been an accountant for 15 years, but maybe now I want to be a painter. Like, you can change. You can try. You have that choice. But then in that Star Wars way, I think what really struck me is I really like the phrasing of who you were does not have to define who you are, because it almost goes to some of the discussions that we've had about redemption, you know, and that word redemption got used and kind of just the standard term for what happens with Vader, Anakin at the end of Return of the Jedi. And then as we were building up to Rise of Skywalker, that question about can Kylo ever be redeemed? And phrasing it like this so gets down to, it's not about, hey, I did one thing and now I'm forgiven for everything always. It doesn't change the past, just that idea that's been in a lot of modern Star Wars storytelling of, I can make a different choice anytime and I can start heading back down the road in a different direction.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to say, yeah, Ben Solo doesn't, to me, Ben Solo is not defined what people know of Kylo Ren, if that makes sense. His redemption can be very personal too, because he might never, the name Kylo Ren and Ben Solo might be soiled forever.
Right.
Vader's was, so yeah.
Yeah. I think the shorter, simpler way of trying to, of what I'm trying to say is, one good choice is always worth it for being one good choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that idea and how it relates to larger storytelling and this specific episode. Moving along, we had some action back in the Clone Wars. Did you have a favorite action moment?
I really enjoyed Ahsoka kind of fist fighting and kicking the pikes. No real force involved, no lightsabers, just her fighting on the ground, man. And I was watching that again this morning, just like, she's in it, man, and kicking ass. And I really like that sequence.
Yeah, yeah, no, that was very, very cool. And there's so much of Ahsoka using the force in secret, which we'll talk about. But I have to say, one of my favorite force moves, we got to add it to my list if we ever do a Star Wars ranked on best force moves, her lifting the pikes out of cover to be shot by the Martez sisters.
Yes. I love that. That was, I think I even missed that the first time. Must have looked down. You know, you didn't think you looked down. I saw it this morning. I was like, I want to do this on a video game.
Yeah, in the way that they were complimenting each other, like, great shot. Yeah. It was just like, it's you know, it's violent. The pikes are getting shot, but is just, I love seeing more imaginative ways of like, hey, if we can just kind of push and pull people around with the force, what all can we do? Oh, just pull them into the line of fire. That's awesome. we will talk more about some other favorite moments of action as we dig into all of the details of the episode. But first, we are going to take a quick break, and then we will be back for more Dangerous Debt here on the Clone Wars Report.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And we are back here on the Clone Wars Report. We are discussing the episode Dangerous Debt, and we are going to get into some of the details scene by scene. So we begin right away, right in the cage. Ahsoka, Trace, and Rafa are in a cell on Obadiah. Ahsoka's making the moral argument about spice and how it will hurt people, and she hears the story of Luminara accidentally killing the Martez parents. And we talked a lot about all of the kind of big thematic and moral implications and wrestling with that. But I wanted to dive into, how did you feel to just kind of hear this depth of Clone Wars canon kind of tying it all together?
I got to tell you, once I worked through the other things, or even while I was experiencing some other questions about what I felt about the characters were saying or feeling, take that aside, I love this, man, right? Because it scratches that surface level canon itch. It makes it all count. It makes me wonder what's going on. And sometimes I don't like, you know, I've mentioned before, I don't want to have too much. Well, around the corner was this character. You just didn't know it. We created the character 30 years later. Some of that, I'm not a huge fan of it, but other times they've won me over. Singer, as one of those examples. This one, I like it. Now I want to go back and watch other Clone Wars episodes and be like, what could that mean for more story?
Yeah. No, I really, this is, as much as I love talking about like the big themes and ideas, I do just nerd out about as soon as that story started, I was partially paying attention to the stakes of it, but I was really getting excited about, ooh, is this going to be from an episode that we actually saw? And ooh, which Jedi did that? And as soon as the Jedi description happened, which Jedi could that be? And I really just enjoyed that from enjoying canon and making it feel like a lived in world. But then as I sat with it a little bit more, I like that it felt very full circle, because there are a million different, you know, ideas or moments of violence. It could have been the Zillow Beast, you know, but
right.
The fact that it was Zero the Hutt and, you know, involving Cad Bane and goes back to the beginning of Clone Wars with the first story, the movie involving Zero the Hutt, has a little bit of this full circle vibe of that. That was an event that happened relatively early on, and kind of tying it back to the beginning in some ways was really cool to me.
Oh, it totally was. And I know, since, you know, Rafa and Trace are kind of newer additions to the story and everything, right? Because there was this one kid, I think, that was attached to it. So to me, it tells me not that when they put that first moment out there, that they were like, hey, 7 years from now or seven seasons from now, moment back. But the fact that they could look back at previous storytelling and go, where does this fit in? You know, it's not just a canon checklist, but where does it fit in? And how does it help us tell our story, but also just being fun? Yeah, well done.
Yeah. And for me, the long personal journey I've had with Clone Wars, which I've talked about plenty, but, you know, when I first saw the movie and had my ups and downs with it, the weirdness of Zero and the Truman Capote impression was one of the things that was the toughest for me. And now to kind of, for myself, go full circle where I'm happy, thrilled to hear a reference to Zero the Hutt and go, oh, awesome. What happened with Zero? Oh, can we get that? Can we get some more Zero?
Victory for Zero the Hutt.
Victory for Zero the Hutt, even though I know he is dead, shot by Sice Noodles. So very, very sad. It also really grabbed me of, because this is Filoni now doing this all by himself, my mind just kind of keeps centering on that. And I wonder how much this is also a taking responsibility for how violent the Clone Wars is. Because, like, even compared to Star Wars Rebels, Clone Wars is, there is a ton of death. And I wonder if this is a little bit of Filoni thinking through, okay, but what happened to the characters by that explosion and that clone trooper that got slaughtered? Do they have a friend?
I wonder, you know, and he's also working on Mando, which has its own special breed of violence, too. And it's built in to these wars in the stars, and to be able to, again, make me think, make anyone else think, or to at least show the other side of it. I applaud him if it's done with any level of intention.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, and this is one of those things I think I am pontificating from the creator's perspective, but this is one of the great things too, of once something exists, we as the audience get to interpret it and play with it as we want. So even if it's not intended, it's a fun thing to think through of just my own enjoyment of the Clone Wars, because I enjoy the action. I enjoy the explosions. I enjoy seeing the Jedi go crazy. But I also like to think about the ramifications of it, and it's really cool that this story allows me to do that. Speaking of violence, let's move on to Rafa being fairly brutally tortured by an 8D Smelter series droid. And my question for you, Ken, is what is with these droids' love and torture?
I'll tell you what, it's still one of the best designs in Star Wars. Low-key, one of the best designed creatures, droids, characters in Star Wars, right? They are creepy. They're built for torture. I guess that's it. I want to meet the one that's just like out there writing poems and chasing space butterflies.
Yeah.
This one, beautiful.
Yeah. This one was, go ahead.
Recording remotely has struck us again. And I'm not celebrating the torture of Rafa, but just the hunch, the drag of the foot, like this is a win in terms of design.
Yeah, this is great. The hunch, the sparking hands, a beautiful, creepy design. And then, yeah, it has such great connection to the tortured droid in Jabba's palace. And then when you were at Galaxy's Edge, there is the similar series droid who is constantly rotating the big piece of meat.
Yep.
Did you worry about that droid maybe at Galaxy's Edge losing its mind and starting to torture people?
I mean, he's torturing that meat. Yeah, so it's intimidating. I didn't, and you know, for the record, I didn't order any meat. I was afraid. I ordered some some weird breakfast yogurt. So yeah, it works on that level too. You just can't help but thinking, look at that thing torturing that meat.
It's so great that you said torturing that meat twice on this podcast. That is a beautiful phrase. Moving along. So then we get a lot of escaping. There's a whole lot of escaping. Trace is the one who kicks butt, and she kicks literal, not literal Pike, but she meets some Pikes up, shoots them, throws them in front of the sparking hands of the 8D smelter droid. Ahsoka unlocks the door with force. We get some the Thorian and Weequay fighting. So I wanted to ask you specifically about Trace's combat skills. Did you feel like, oh, she's got more street smart toughs up her sleeve than we thought?
Yeah, this reminded me of Rey in Force Awakens. Same kind of thing, you know. Just she probably has had to have been in a few scrapes in her day, and this speaks to their level, the tough level of survival needed, the survivor skills needed. So I really liked it. Other than, again, Star Wars can just work on the action moment, man. It could just work on the surface. You can live there and be fine and cool. It was a great fight sequence. But I like watching it, man, because she didn't really show. Her skills were mechanical, right?
Yeah.
That's what flying, she hopes, she wishes. But the fact that this has had to happen. Now, again, not celebrating at some point Trace has needed a fight for food or something like that, but just this is an intriguing, well-rounded character.
Yeah, I think since last episode and kind of the beginning of this episode has really cast her as the younger, more naive sister. It was a nice surprise to go, oh yeah, even though we saw her fight in the first episode of this arc, that she is resourceful and good with a blaster was really cool to see. The other thing that I really liked in this sequence, throughout this episode, they used a lot of those background Cantina Kenner action figures again.
Yes.
Which made me feel like, are they the same characters? Do they or do they just, a lot of people dress that way? Is that the blue onesie is a common Thorian garb? But I was just really entertained when, I liked Trace letting the Thorian and the Weequay out, but in particular that Thorian is the action figure of Hammerhead, and when he gets out he grabs the pike and he literally hammers the pike's head into the wall. And it just made me so happy to see Hammerhead actually hammer a head.
It took 42 plus years to finally fulfill that promise.
That's right. If you name an action figure Hammerhead, you gotta hammer some heads. Anything else in this general prison escape sequence that you wanted to touch on?
Apparently there is. I just put a note that said Ahsoka is, quote, gonna help. And as I'm looking at it now, I don't remember what that means. I gotta make a little more thorough notes when I'm writing in the morning and having coffee. Oh, so
yeah. Was it her choice to unlock the door?
Might have been. I can't believe it's hilarious because I was so proud of myself. I've been taking better notes. Ahsoka is, quote, gonna help, like I'm taunting Ahsoka.
You're gonna help, Ahsoka. All right. Well, let's move on. We'll see if we unlock the meaning of that mystery note. So then the next big section of the episode is a lot of fleeing. There's a lot of mayhem and fighting as they try to escape, and a lot of Ahsoka using the Force secretly, including the pushing Trace. So she makes the jump, Ahsoka herself doing a jump, that control tower butt kicking scene that you mentioned, that where she is not being seen by the Martez sisters. So she's really going out full force. I wanted to ask you how you felt about the sort of the storytelling morality of Ahsoka hiding her Jedi skills at this point.
In terms of do I agree with it, or do I want her to just to pull out a lightsaber? I love the tension of it. I'll just go there. I love the tension that I still think she feels as though she can't reveal this to anyone. Unless they'll come chase it after. I think more than anything, she doesn't want them to come around anymore. Maybe Anakin to talk, but she doesn't want to go back. And I like, it just creates tension. So when it finally does explode fully, whether it's in this arc or the next one, Ahsoka's going to be front and center again, right? As who she is. So I just like that building tension. And I like that, like you said, to your point, no one's watching. She can do a force push and push all four of those, you know, jerks out the window, but she's keeping it to close to the chest.
Yeah, yeah. And it makes sense in this episode in particular, where she was getting closer because they were in such danger. They're just going, yeah, I am a Jedi. I'm going to unlock the door with the force, and then I'm going to, you know, kick all these Pike's ass, and you're going to listen to me because I'm a Jedi. It seems like she's about to do that, and then has this horrible backstory of the Martez sisters' revelation, and now it almost feels like she doesn't want them to know, almost on a personal level, but she's also really finding in herself, like, yeah, I really feel like my goal is a light side force user is to just help. And of course, I'm not going to let Trace fall or let myself be left behind because Roth is not coming back for me. There's an interesting morality to it of, is it an omission or is she lying to the Martez sisters?
Ooh, yeah, I would say a omission. Obviously, a lot of reason. There was reason before, but there's more reason now to not say, oh, by the way, Skywalker Academy, I'm in Jedi Order.
Yeah, yeah. I think that will be addressed next episode. But I also agree with you. It's just really fun because you get to see different kinds of force use. I really loved the leap over and the they think that she fell in Rafa's delivery on. That's terrible.
Yeah. One of my favorite Ahsoka lines now. I look more athletic than I look.
Which she looks pretty athletic. Yeah. Like how That's much great. More athletic can you look than looking like you are, you know, an Olympic level gymnast? Yeah, so it creates all this great action, including the moment I love of pulling the Pikes out from cover. And it almost makes me want to see, like, yeah, I would love to see a full-on James Bond Jedi espionage where they're using the Force constantly but without being discovered. There are moments of that in Star Wars, but it'd be great to see, like, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, I love that.
Anything else in this general section that you made notes on?
I understood every note that I had, right? I liked a lot. I liked the sequence a lot just on the surface. There was, I think, you brought up some pacing stuff, so I had some of the, initially had some thoughts too, but that's a little bit later on.
Okay. Because I enjoyed all this action, particularly because it was Ahsoka being a secret Jedi. And then we get to kind of a big canon moment that I think a lot of people are excited about, Return of the Mandalorians. So we see Bo-Katan recognize Ahsoka. She says, I think that's the Jedi I met on Karlak. That is the Clone Wars episode, A Friend in Need. Involves Lux Bonteri coming up with a incredibly dubious plan to draw Count Dooku out so he can get revenge. And it does not work out well for really anyone. And then Bo-Katan specifically says that the Jedi might be useful against their common enemy. So beyond set up for, this is how Ahsoka finds out the situation with Maul and gets to Mandalore to set up the last arc, what else did you respond to in this? What did it mean to you?
Well, what it means, we always talk about the why in situations in Star Wars. This is, we got problems on Mandalore. We got Maul in charge, Darksaber there, all those kind of situations. The Mandalorians don't trust Jedis, but we're in an era where essentially maybe Bo-Katan could go to the Jedi Order, could at least go to the government on Coruscant and be like, hey, there's a problem over here. Maybe she did. And the answer is no. And so she immediately recognizes Ahsoka, you know, she's not like, oh, there's Ahsoka Tano, my friend from another mission. She's like, oh, that, I think that's so-and-so. And there's a feeling that Bo-Katan has that is the type of person that will help me. Not the other Jedi I know, not the other government organizations or military factions I know. That's the person that I could seek help. It's a pretty powerful moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really interesting that it was tied, you know, Bo-Katan is where she is at right now because, you know, she knows that Maul killed her sister and kind of had that great moment with Obi-Wan where Obi-Wan figures out that they are that Bo-Katan and Satine are related. So there is that little bit of like, well, Bo-Katan could, she knows she could probably call Obi-Wan for help, but would he? Or would he be too, you know, proper? And I think, you know, a lot of this starts to tie to the Son of Dathomir four-issue comic book. So I would, if people are really, like, canon hungry for all of this, I think that's definitely a great series to catch up on, because that picks up from the last time that we have seen Maul in Clone Wars, where he has had his operation shut down by Sidious. And this is kind of the, how does Maul end up back on Mandalore and that whole Son of Dathomir comic. And there's a lot in there about, you know, what the Jedi do and do want when it do and don't want when it comes to Maul and Mandalore and all that. So there's a lot of juicy stuff there. Then Ursa Wren was there. How did you feel about that?
Oh, I love that, man. I love that. I love the connection. And now we are playing with, you know, the chance to maybe go back and add some scenes or refix some scenes that they may have already done. Yeah, you know, this season seven is this weird mix. A lot of this was already done. A lot of it was it's adjusted, and some of it's brand spanking new. So to be able to go back and correct it or change things, I really love that. And, you know, that mysterious third Mandalorian there doesn't say much. It's got my speculating running amok. I think it could have been. I'm trying to track the timeline, but I think it could be a young Sabine.
Ooh, really?
That's what I think. I mean, but this is speculation run amok. It could be. Yeah. It could be Cheryl Wren, but their cousin. You know.
Yeah.
Picnics.
I think Sabine would probably be too young, right? Because this is good. Yeah. 15 years before Rebels begins.
That's what I'm saying. The timeline sets. That's why speculation starts running irresponsibly. And suddenly you're forced to do a theory videos on a channel that barely exists anymore. I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong, but it got me running. Got my mind racing.
How about this for wild speculation / desire? How would you feel if we meet the armorer from The Mandalorian?
Okay. Now you just swayed me. You got my vote. You're doing good. You're doing some really grassroots campaigning here. I would like that too. Having just watched the first three episodes of Mando this weekend as well too, and really, really do love the armor. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see since there is in Mandalorian some different philosophy of Mandalorians versus some of the stuff that we see in the Clone Wars. If Filoni will use this last arc to do any sort of playing with those ideas will be really interesting to me. Mm-hmm. But I'm very happy to just kind of see all of these threads between Rebels, Clone Wars, and The Mandalorian, you know, possibly meeting up is really cool and exciting. So going toward the end here, the gang gets recaptured. Rafa fully apologizes. Ahsoka says, well, you know, we live and learn. And then Trace is like, well, we'll see how long we live, basically.
Yeah, that was a great It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode you just pitched there. The gang gets recaptured. I love that. Sorry, I started laughing and got distracted. This was interesting for me because this was where I did have initial, like, we did all that to get recaptured again, which is just a base level reaction to things. But it's obviously about what we learned on the journey.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree with that. It is about what we learn on the journey. And I think I got some maybe predictions, hopes for what might happen in the fourth episode. But there is a little bit for me, even though I've loved all of the ideas and all the characters in this arc, there is that plotting question of how many events happen and what has changed from the beginning of the episode to the end of the episode. And thematically and emotionally, those have always been satisfying for me in this arc. But just in terms of events, of physically, what did the characters accomplish? What did they choose? And where did they end up? Just plot-wise, I'm really hoping for a good payoff for the fact that they are, well, back where we started. Because it has a little bit of a Laurel and Hardy, well, this is another fine mess. We're back where we started kind of vibe to it.
100%, you know, is going to lead to Bo-Katan breaking them out, all those kind of wonderful things. Questions to answer next week, of course. But yeah, just a little bit again, and that's on the surface. And I know where you're coming from too. I think I felt it the first times, particularly the first time.
Yeah, but I think I think I really, more than anything, agree with you that even though I've got some questions, that it is more important of what did we learn in terms of characters, in terms of ideas. So I'm not too upset about it, but just poking a little bit of fun. I think for next episode, it is interesting to me of, is it just going to be, Bo-Katan breaks in and says, hey, I'm going to rescue you because I need a Jedi. And then Ahsoka fully has to deal with sharing the truth with her new friends, you know, or is it going to be a little bit more that now that the three of them have kind of all over the arc of this episode taken a little bit more responsibility for their choices, if they're going to be able to work together as a team and escape better this time.
I like both options. I kind of want Ahsoka to have control over the reveal and what it means. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. Good point. As we begin to wrap up here, do you have any other characters, moments, planets, ideas that you want to discuss from the episode Dangerous Debt?
Yeah, minor things, but fun things. I thought Obadiah was begging to be a video game level on some story mode on Battlefront 3 that we'll never get, or, you know, just play it. Like, it just looked beautiful. It was kind of reminded me of like a course on 1313 type of thing as well, but like, just, it looked great. I could see runner, and they're literally doing the duck and run, shoot, duck, fight, you know, get to the next level. Ooh, there's our ship. We must climb up. Press X to jump up. I like that.
Yeah.
There was also two little moments. The Weequay and Ithorian did show back up in this episode when they're out walking around, and I think I missed it the first time, but the second time to see them just looking back and being like, "Oh, let's keep going." It was a fun little nod. And the final one for me, this brutal pike guard death. The door closed. The elevator goes. It's like we assume ripped and cut in half and smooshed.
Yep, and then they didn't even really use that elevator. It was just to take his weapon, I think.
Yeah. I mean, God, you got to do what you got to do. You do great. But, you know, now I want them to go talk to his kids, all right?
It is. It was a great counterpoint to all of my, the Clone Wars is going to take responsibility for the acts of, his head got smashed in an elevator.
And they, you know, and they show the brief second of, whoa, no, it's like Temple of Doom where Pat Roach's character gets smushed. Like,
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up the hammerhead moment, because I love the little noise he makes. That's a great one. I wanted to agree with you on Obadiah, the prison in general. It's just one of the great Clone Wars designs. One of the reasons that I love the whole prequel era of how it expanded the design palette of Star Wars from the original trilogy, and just the kind of flowing, sort of beautiful, like, what a beautiful prison to be held in.
No. I agree with you there. That is very, very almost Oda Gunga, you know, some Gunga influence in there. I liked that.
Yeah. And then the last thing that I wanted to share, which I thought about a little bit during the episode, but then my mind went to it more when we were talking about Ahsoka learning from Anakin, the idea that she also learned from Obi-Wan, and watching the episode and thinking, what are moments where Ahsoka is doing what Obi-Wan would do versus when is Ahsoka doing what Anakin would do? And Ahsoka, like, being a little shady, not admitting she's a Jedi, and secretly using the Force to quietly take care of problems, that is so Obi-Wan. But then at the end, when, like, Trace and Rafa look like they've been recaptured, what should I do? Grab a giant ship and plow into stuff is so Anakin.
Yeah, well, you know, that's one of the great things about Ahsoka. She's so herself, such an individual, and such on that journey, but, you know, she has three big influences, and that's Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Padme. So to see, you can see some of those actions throughout. So I think that's I would expect nothing less from you to recognize Obi-Wan's legacy in everything.
I try to celebrate Obi-Wan whenever I can. Moving on to the end of the podcast here. If you could have an action figure of any of these characters we met, who would you want an action figure of?
I think I'm going with the Trace and Rafa escape with an exclamation point 2-pack. I think they're a great fighting duo. I think you could sell that 2-pack. I want a Trace and Rafa figure, but why not put them together? and call it, Obadiah Escape.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, because they could come with some of the blasters, the pike blasters and, stun prods that they stole.
Yeah, you could make it
make even that death worth it. Yeah.
Three-pack with a pike guard, too. With its
What's that?
You could make it a three-pack with the pike guard with a removable head.
Oh, that is perfect. You got yourself a cinema scene.
Yes.
For myself, I think I'd go as creepy and awful as that droid was. I think I'd go with the 8D smelting droid with the hunchback and the sparking hands. That would be pretty great.
Ooh. Yeah, you get some of those little plastic, like the lightning bolts they use for like Palpatine figures. Just put the little sparks coming out. I like that.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful action figure. And we're gonna wrap up this episode as we always do by hearing the moral. What do you think the moral of this episode of our Clone Wars Report podcast is?
I think the moral should be you do not have to be defined by your first viewing of anything.
That is absolutely beautiful. That has been the Clone Wars Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.